Hey there, MuggleCast listeners! I am back to inform you of some excellent news. GoDaddy.com is having better deals than ever. For only $3.59 a month for 12 months, you can get GoDaddy.com's Economy Package. And with 250 gigs of bandwidth, 5 gigs of storage, and up to 500 email accounts, you can get your own website up and running with success. And as usual, enter code MUGGLE, that's M-U-G-G-L-E, when you check out. Save an additional 10% on any order. Some restrictions apply. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
Today's MuggleNet podcast is brought to you by Borders. In May, thousands of Harry Potter fans descended upon New Orleans for the Phoenix Rising Conference. Borders was there to take in the sights and share a lively discussion of the series that has bewitched the world with some of Harry's most dedicated fans. Listen in and watch the action yourself. Check out the Phoenix Rising Borders Book Club discussion at bordersmedia.com/Harry Potter or click on the Borders banner at the top of the MuggleNet page.
This week's show is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Log on to audible.com/MuggleCast today for details.
Because we're on a crowded train and can't record an intro, this is MuggleCast episode 97 for July 2nd, 2007. Andrew and Jamie rule.
Well, we have a busy show this week because there's lots to discuss.
Yes, there is.
Like what?
We're going to be places this summer.
Places?
We're
going
to be at a lot of places.
That's very
have
vague.
Have we talked about the tour yet?
Very vague.
On the little mini show that you slept through.
The mini show that
but
I slept through, yeah.
Besides
that,
it
was just that good.
Yeah. No, you just refused to get out of bed.
Actually, okay, Andrew, I can't let that go. Even though we just started the show, I wasn't asked if I wanted to be on it. They just held a microphone to my head and just said, you know, Jamie, you coming to the show? And I was like, and then I just went back to sleep.
Dude, we checked with you beforehand.
But
we were
there's
like,
a difference.
Jamie, do you want to be in on this? He was like, no, I can't. I'm tired.
No.
I was like,
you
that's good
me.
Because
you
we can't. We don't have room for one more mic anyway.
Okay, whatever. This doesn't matter. This is so irrelevant. It's unbelievable.
Okay, well, no. In all seriousness, we do have a lot to announce this week. It's a big week because, as Micah promised last week in his intro, we're going to talk about our big podcasting plans that we're all going to be at, except for Eric.
Yeah.
And this is a big week for Eric because he's actually in the United States. Can't believe it. Thanks for staying in your home country this week, Eric.
Oh, yeah, no problem. It's been good fun.
Glad you're here. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Jamie Lawrence.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Laura Thompson.
And I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
It's been a very busy news week. The news just keeps rolling down the mug on that page. Every time I go on there, there's another 6 stories posted
yep.
by Kieran or Rosie or...
Who's Rosie?
Who else posts news on Muggle? Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh, really? She works for us now.
Yeah, she started working for us.
After The View, she decided she wanted to...
How can you not your own staff, Micah?
Yeah.
What?
After The View, she decided that it would be a good idea to go with the sort of Harry Potter...
She's a big fan
it's a
anyway,
step up.
So... Exactly, yeah. What it is a big step up, you know. National... syndicated show is nothing to MuggleNet.
No, MuggleNet is basically a nationally syndicated website.
International.
Worldwide.
Yeah.
Internationally.
Wow, could we be any more modest at this point?
Yeah. Yes, we can. Well, of course, one of the big stories this week... Well, one of the more interesting stories. Let me read an email here from Ricey. I think that's his name.
Or her.
17 of Canada. She writes, I was going through, or he writes, I was going through the comments on MuggleNet about the audiobook of DH being released on July 21st, and someone said that Draco means dragon, which is a possible connection to the DH Deluxe Edition cover. Do you guys think that Draco is an animagus? Could it be Draco on the DH cover helping the trio by helping them on the Horcrux hunt? Stephen Fry did say, never tickle a sleeping dragon. Perhaps this is part of the storyline. Just wondering what you guys thought. I'm a bit skeptical about this, but hey, it's a possibility. I'm sure Joe's put in many surprises for us in DH. So, in the big announcement that the audiobook would be released alongside the real book for the first time ever, at least in the UK, there's a little video that Stephen Fry recorded where he said he was very excited to be releasing the book, and he can't talk about it yet, of course, but at the end, he said, I can't tell you much, however, I do want to say one thing, and then he said the whole, that Latin slogan.
That, I would say, is a reference to, or is a copy of, when Joe wrote Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, in the intro written by Dumbledore, it says, to all muggles, I'd like to say that all the beasts mentioned in this book, all the creatures mentioned here, are completely fictitious and cannot hurt you, and you know, and stuff like that. And then he pauses and he says, but to all wizards, I say merely Draco Dormion's Nunquam Titillandus. So it's just, I don't think it's any reference to the plot, it's just like Harry Potter has come a full circle, and that's the motto of Hogwarts, so he's just saying it to try and be funny, and to try and, you know, show that it's an important thing. I don't think it means anything, but, and also, a dragon is quite a kind of, big creatures, because, you know, it always seems to be human sort of animals that they transfigure into. Like, it would be kind of unfair if they had a fight and one turned into a rat, you know, Pettigrew, and one turned into a dragon.
Right.
I mean, they say you turn into an animal, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I would assume that dragons are.
Here's a question. What Disney film does this whole thing remind you of? Like, having fights when you're transformed into an animal.
Mulan.
Yeah, sorry. That's what I thought of. Mulan.
Oh, really? Oh, well, there's two then.
I've never seen it, but...
Wait, what happens in that?
Well, it's just a dragon.
Yeah, oh, isn't Eddie Murphy
I was going to say the Sword in the Stone. You know, Madam Mim, when they when they transform into creatures and, like...
I never saw that.
Merlin. You've never seen the Sword in the Stone? Andrew, get out of my house now.
Well, Jamie,
it's raining.
I don't want to. There was a sequel to, what was it, Snow White, called Happily Ever After, and the Wicked Witch's brother or something, I believe, could turn into a dragon in that. And also it reminds me of non-Disney, Mortal Kombat Annihilation, where they all turn into giant.
Eric, I was just thinking that. That is absolutely brilliant. I was just thinking that. Sorry,
Thank you.
Go on.
But yeah, dragons in general, I mean, they're a lot bigger than humans, and even, like, turning into a stag is, like, relatively plausible when you know...
Completely,
You're turning it on, you know, turning into a
into
giant...
Into a blue whale. It would be unfair
exactly,
if you just
crush
it. Yeah.
And you'd, of course, need water. You'd, of course, only be able to change
precisely,
it.
Yeah.
In a pool or something, or in your neighbor's, you know, pond.
In your pond.
But the... Yeah, so I don't think of it. I don't think it's Draco. I don't think he's an animagus, or if he is, I don't think it's a dragon.
It's quite unlikely.
A little bit unlikely.
That seems too fairy tale-ish.
I don't think he's powerful enough for starters.
Yeah, you do. Yeah,
but he's a wimp.
He's a bit of a wimp.
Just the whole concept in general.
He couldn't even kill someone.
Dragon.
Just
makes
me. Yeah,
wow.
Gosh, it's like so. You know, first year level.
It's so easy to kill somebody.
Yeah, it's only the gravest crime known to mankind.
Yeah, exactly. But still, you shouldn't tickle him. You should not tickle
you
Draco.
Tickle him, yeah. He gets mad.
Whether he's Draco or not.
It's like the Hulk.
Even if he's a dragon.
Well, moving on to some other news. We found out this week that there was a little debacle going on in Warner Brothers. And between Warner Brothers and J.K. Rowling about a certain character to be cut out of the film. And they weren't sure whether or not to cut out this character or not. And Joe highly recommended that they keep it in.
Spoiler. There you go.
Nobody knew who it was until the other day when David Yates did reveal that it was actually Creature who J.K. Rowling insisted stay in the movie. And it's interesting. Let me quote him here. It says, it was Creature, actually. We took Creature out, and Joe said, listen, guys, you don't have to put Creature back, but I'm just telling you, if you want to kind of keep a thread going for 6 and 7, you might want Creature to come back. She basically told us Creature plays a role in 7, in a sense. She hinted. We thought about it for 5 seconds, and he came back, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So, very interesting. I think we've discussed it on the show before, what kind of role would Creature play if he indeed was the character that was...
I mean, do you think it's important because of the whole he, you know, betrayed Sirius, and it's to do with that storyline, or just because of his position, how he's, you know, he's, his master is Harry, but he tries to get back to, you know, Bellatrix and the evil people?
I think that's probably
I think it's his role as the House Elf for the Black family. We're trying to find out, you know, R.A.B. and stuff, who is Creature's master, as you know, just as much.
Yeah.
Well, there's also been a lot of debate.
It was David Heyman, not David Yates.
Are you sure? Because I just checked the article and said David Yates.
It says
maybe they both said it simultaneously.
Oh no! You know what? I'm looking
at the same
the,
time in sync.
It was just coincidence, seriously.
No, it is David Yates. But when I read the actual, when I read the article before we knew who it was, Joe's words, as quoted in the article, were, "You've got your hands tied behind your back if you don't put this character." You know, if you don't keep this character in. And, you know, that's one of those moments where I say, go Joe, for telling them that, and also for, you know, caring about them tying their hands behind their backs. Because we've talked at length before about how they just cut things out of the movies, and they've got very little continuity between the movies, and for things to happen in the future to only be developed in that film, it kind of is not as, you know, admirable as we want it to be. So this was cool.
Well, you know, there's also been a lot of debate about the creature that's behind Harry holding the sword in the cover, and I think that this could pretty much confirm that that's Creature.
Oh, you think so?
What?
Yeah, because... Well,
no, it's still Dobby.
I don't think... Why do you think it's Dobby?
Wait, do we see his face?
No,
I'm
you
sorry.
Only no. You only see a hand holding a sword. And if Creature is important... I mean, the thing is, if Dobby were important, we would still see Dobby in the movies. She would have done the same thing, just sort of said, you know, hey, keep Dobby in. But she said Creature, which means he's definitely far more significant, which means it's more likely that it's him on the cover.
I don't think that at all.
I agree with
that. I actually don't think that at all.
Why not, Eric?
She just wished Dobby a happy birthday.
She wishes...
She's on the count.
Eric,
she...
I know, but
she wishes...
Everyone gets...
Inventor of this
happy birthday.
You know, self-staring cauldroner. Happy birthday. There's got to be more important people. I think she just wishes everyone one, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting fact.
Okay, sorry. Well, I just don't think Creature comes around on... Okay.
No, I was going to say, interesting fact. Did you know that if you're in a room with 23 people, okay, so if there are 23 people in one room, there's more than a 50% chance that two people will share the same birthday. Isn't that interesting?
Really?
Oh my god.
How is that possible when there's 365 days a year?
That is really interesting.
There are 365.
How is that possible when there's 365 days a year?
Oh, 365. Yeah, it's possible. It's because you have more than one pairing. So if you have 23 people, you have 1 and 2, 1 and 3, 1 and 4, 1 and 5. Then you have 2 and 3, 2 and 4, 2 and 5, 2 and 6. Then you have 3, 3 and 3, 3 and 4. So you have all these pairings. So there's over a 50% chance. And but I think for it to be a 100% chance, you have to have exactly the amount of people and exactly the amount of days. But for like a 99.9% chance, it's like 200 and something. It's stupid.
That's crazy.
We should find out when we do a show. Just like start naming off days and let people raise
their
hands.
Should. Yeah.
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 Should.
We should get them to line up. You know, in ascending birthday order.
But Laura, are you suggesting that we only get 23 people to our shows, because I think you'll find...
No. I was talking about...
23,000.
Yeah.
Well, Jamie, you'd also have to subtract us from the 23.
Exactly, yeah.
So, I mean, we'd even have less people.
Yeah, so we'd have to have, like...
Ooh.
16.
My birthday is May 23rd.
23rd.
23rd?
Yeah, mine's April 23rd. There's a lot of number 23s. Crazy. And that's a movie I saw on the way here.
Oh, hey, speaking of interesting facts with birthdays, the Times came out with their Order of the Phoenix review. 3 out of 5 stars.
But can I just say that like UK newspapers,
average.
The Guardian also reviews, you know, has a film review section, and it's just so professional and polite. It doesn't actually tell you what you want to know about a film. It's like, you know, this is like the juxtaposition of character development and you know, plot outlines.
Exactly.
It's oxymoronic in the sort of, you know, past tense. It's just, you don't want to know that. You just want to know, should I go and see the film or not? So you can't trust these broadsheet reviews, you know. And even though 3 is pretty good, because they don't give
Let me quote their review. You're exactly right. Let me quote their review. The acting skills of Radcliffe, Rupert Grint, and Emma Watson have improved, but not enough to truly flesh out the characters and provide the narrative depth that this transitional plot-advancing film needs. They've got angry and determined
accent,
down pat at this point. Oh, it should be English. But struggle somewhat on the more nonce grimaces. Harry's bellowing constant analysis of Voldemort is jarringly awful.
But it's just full of adjectives to describe it. It just, you know, I don't want to read stuff like that. What?
Well, I mean, what I get from that is what they're saying is that they all have the very common emotions down, but they're really having a hard time, like, getting deeper into their characters,
yeah,
I guess. Which, I mean, kind of upsets me to read that a little bit. Like,
I'm crying.
Because there's a lot of different emotions in this story. It's beyond the point of...
But I don't know about you guys, but I like reviews that use words like awesome and amazing CGI effects and, you know...
Neato.
Wow, he was badass.
Well, right,
man.
But if
you
it's
know,
a bad
like
movie...
what the hell is...
I mean,
what the hell is Cod's...
Well, I mean...
Psychoanalyst. What the hell is... It's like a study of fish.
Yeah, that's what I was
Jamie,
thinking.
have you seen the movie Eraser?
With Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, I mean, you don't examine his character development throughout course of the movie, do you?
No, I don't. No,
Well, look, guys, I mean, this is... No, Jamie is completely right. This is not the kind of stuff you want to hear about. I mean, with a movie that's this book and, you know, being turned into movies, the last thing you almost want to hear about is how the trio is fitting in the roles, because... What I'm more concerned about is how the movie handles everything, and if the movie is an actual good movie. You know, they're here complaining about the acting. Obviously, not at all the kinds of things that we would necessarily or anybody would want to hear about.
Well,
right? But I mean, I heard something that might actually shed some light on it, because I actually have a friend who just contacted me today and was privy to one of the secret, super secret audience screenings.
MySpace.com has these things called... well, first of all, everyone has a MySpace here, right?
Yeah.
MySpace? Everyone's got a MySpace?
Yeah.
Except for Micah. Micah, how do you count yourself as a human in this world if you don't have a MySpace?
He has a Facebook.
A profile. MySpace.com/AndrewSims.
Means he doesn't count himself as an emo in this world, because he doesn't have MySpace.
Top 8 me. Mirror pics.
That used to be true, though, didn't it? MySpace isn't really the haven of emos that it used to be. Because it was a...
No, it's not. It's everybody now.
Woe is me.
You know, I have a confession to make. Actually, no, I don't want to talk about that. Never mind. So anyway, MySpace does this thing called black curtain screenings, where all you have to do is print out your profile with the Harry Potter profile and the black curtain screenings profile in your top 8 or whatever. You bring it to them at one of these, like, 10 cities, and you get to see the movie for free, which is actually pretty cool.
That is cool.
And, like I'm sure Eric was about to get into, there's been a few listeners of the show who have actually gone to one of these black curtain screenings.
Yes.
And sent in little reviews, right, Eric?
Yes, that's exactly how I knew this person and how it was introduced. My friend Jennifer of New York had just been to a black curtain screening and has given me much more valuable information in a review format than the Times seemed, you know, to be useful for us Harry Potter fans. Do you mind, guys, if I just do the first kind of non really bad spoilerish what I heard?
Yeah,
from
I was going to say, just don't give away any spoilers.
I
just very very
right.
You know,
what I had heard actually was that the movie has a disappointing amount of one-liners in it, and that there was some particular tweaking of the Dementors that was not really true to anything worthwhile. Like, I heard, for instance, that they begin to grip Harry and start choking him against the wall with their arms.
And then they clothesline him.
Uh-huh.
and then they curb him.
And, yeah, they curb him.
That is exactly what happened, seriously. They're these Nazi skinheads, these dementors.
I don't even know. So, I mean, but Jennifer did say it was a good movie, but I heard a lot of slightly bad things about it that were disappointing. Namely, the one-liners. Like, what do you guys think about that? Because you'd think that, you know, one or two in a movie is funny, it's great.
Well, when you say one-liners, do you mean jokes, like one-line jokes, or just lines that are too short?
Oh, no. Well, maybe...
No, jokes, right?
One-line jokes, which replace a lot of the exposition that could be happening,
It's a bit annoying, but, you know, I think perhaps it's there to provide the much-needed comedy against the serious backdrop of the film, and I'm starting to sound like a Times review, but... that wasn't as bad as the... But, yeah, I'd say it could be for that, but a few are okay, but when you said one-liners, I was painfully scared of Harry's line in Chamber of Secrets when he says, you know, don't worry, I will be, to Lucius's, well, let's hope Mr. Potter will always be around to save the day. It came second only to Harry's freeze-frame finish at the end of Prisoner of Azkaban on his broomstick.
Well, see, it's just... What I don't want to be reviewing the movie of is saying... For how many great actors they have in this movie, how can it still be crap? Or how can it still be disappointing? Or how can they not? I mean, I really don't think they need to worry about the acting as much as they do the script treatment and treatment of this, you know,
well,
story
can I
and
add
everything
one
else.
Thing?
Yes.
It kind of relates to what you're talking about. Did all you guys listen to the Order of the Phoenix press junket, or did you read it? Because what was said in there by pretty much all the guys, Yates, Heyman, and then Goldenberg, was that they're such fans of the Harry Potter series, and they try to incorporate everything that they possibly can, and that they're so hurt when they can't put things in that they really want to. So I'm wondering, do you think that it all ties into them just saying it for the sake of saying it, when you hear things like there's just these one-liners that were thrown in to sort of cut down on time? I mean...
Probably.
I just find that hard to
believe. Well, you also have to admit that's a matter of opinion. We don't know what Eric's friend considers a disappointing amount.
No, it's true as well. It's true. It's very true. And I wish, I mean, it was just early this morning, first thing I woke up, I heard it from her. So I don't remember exactly, you know, and she did say she liked the movie. But there were a few complaints, and I didn't want to start off the reviewing session with kind of a negative note, you know, not expecting this movie to be much, but... you know, as far as I heard, there were some things. I mean, what do you guys think about the Dementors? I mean, come on, that's true. That's a little bit upsetting.
Yeah.
On the one-liners, though, what I was going to say is, are they putting in just sort of generic one-liners to supplement some of the good one-liners that are actually in the book?
Oh well, there's no way to tell.
There's a couple of them in Order of the Phoenix that are very well written. Obviously, one of them being, you know, sort of give her hell, Peeves, or give her. At the when Fred and George leave.
As far as we know, Peeves isn't in the movie, is he?
Right, which is another compromising factor that I'm sure they felt so horrible about not putting in the film.
We do have a couple other reviews that some listeners sent, and I just want to go through them real quick. They don't really give away any spoilers. Samantha Johnson, 16 of Minnesota, said, "It was so incredible, the best movie yet. Some small details were out of place, but they did not, like in previous movies, add entirely new things, like talking shrunken heads. The acting was absolutely brilliant, and she really enjoyed Vanna Lynch's role, and she was happy with Dumbledore's role." Another one comes from Alana Bennett of Portland, Oregon. She says she still can't believe that she got to see it 2 weeks early, which is cool in itself. The Thestrals are great, she says. Luna and Bellatrix equals awesome. And Umbridge is the height of perfection. Seriously, how could someone be so Umbridge? That's a good sign. I think that's a good sign. And then lastly, John Spencer, 15 of Atlanta, said, "I personally hated every other HP movie, but this was great not only as a movie, but of a movie made after a book. I also took along some of my friends that aren't crazy about the HP movies, and they loved it too." So, overall, I think people are going to enjoy this movie. We've said that a million times.
So
we're just beating around the bush by saying
it again. It sounds like that. I mean, I don't know if you all feel the same, but it sounds like that people aren't comparing this to the book as much. Like
they should
other ones, you know. Well, no, they shouldn't do. But like one and two, because they were in their infancy, people were like, "Well, you know, Harry Potter is a book series." But now, when it's obvious that this movie is only 2 hours 15 minutes, you can't possibly compare it to the book. You can't fit that many pages in 2 hours 15. So perhaps people have, you know, realized that these are completely separate, and that if you enjoy it for a film rather than as a book, then your enjoyment is going to be, you know, elevated tenfold just because you aren't thinking, well, that's not what I thought when I read about Luna.
Well, what Alana Bennett also says from Portland, Oregon, is that they stay true to the books in a lot of ways, even though they stray here and there, and it was too short. So there we get that again, that too shortness, which,
yeah.
Which you know, shows that they like the movie, just maybe if they could have added even more or tried to do things here and there. But again, you know.
Any hardcore fan is going to say that it's too short.
Yeah.
I mean, regardless of what they think overall, the film could have been great, but I'm just thinking to myself that any hardcore fan, no matter what, is going to say that the film was too short and it lacked something.
You're probably right, Mike.
I think you're going to get that no matter what. But the one thing I'm starting to notice, though, and I'm not sure what you guys think of this, is Ivana Lynch, you know, Helena Bonham Carter, and Imelda Staunton are all getting such high praise, but it seems like the trio is not living up to
standards. I noticed that they've been actually it's like the general consensus seems to be that Ivana Lynch, Imelda Staunton, and Helena Bonham Carter are getting all of the praise for this, and you don't that it's,
but they are new, they're fresh to the series. I think that's one of the things.
No, but I mean, I thought that Bonham Carter and Imelda Staunton would be awesome anyway. Obviously it's Ivana, you know, you weren't so sure until you see it, because you know she's a new actress. I'm sure, but everyone said she's absolutely amazing, so I can't wait to see that.
Our very own Ben Shane was also he's seen the movie already. Of course, he can't talk about it yet.
He has.
It's part of the embargo, but he was very impressed with it. He did say though that you absolutely cannot relate it to the book at all. He was talking about a few scenes specifically that really cannot be compared, because if you do, you'll be very disappointed.
Very disappointed,
But anyway, we have a couple big announcements this week concerning a couple things that we're doing. For one, earlier this week, Jamie was sleeping, but Ben and I, along with Mikey B and Alex Carpenter of the Remus Lupins, announced that we're going to be doing a little road tour cross country in America, starting in Las Vegas and heading northeast towards Pittsburgh. For full details on that, you can go to MuggleCast.com and click on the there's a link there in one of the most recent news posts, and we'll put a permanent banner up there soon enough. It's going to be a lot of fun. So if, you know, we've done stuff in L.A., we've done stuff East Coast in New York City, but never in the middle of America or anywhere in between, except for Vegas.
I'm a bit apprehensive about this, because 8 days cross-country is quite tough. Isn't it going to be 8 hours driving a day?
Something like that. It varies from location to location.
You guys going to have a trailer?
It's pretty far.
You're just in a little car?
A Ford Freestar. Ford Freestar. What was booked.
Laptop parties.
And bring your iPod, Jamie. That's all I can say.
I'm gonna bring everything. Every form of entertainment that exists. I'm gonna buy 100 audiobooks, 1,000 songs, and
Are you gonna pick up hitchhikers?
Am I gonna what, Micah?
Pick up hitchhikers along the way.
We need some entertainment.
The cop chase that will follow Jamie, because hitchhiking is illegal in some states.
Oh, really? Yeah, but they'll be big Harry Potter fans. These cops. We'll just tell them a few theories and we'll send them on their way.
Fine. So we're really excited about that. Definitely come out if you're near any of these. I think it's not 8 locations. I think it's like 10. So come on out if you're near any of those. We're really looking forward to going on a little summer road tour. Also, we are organizing 2 very, 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 very big parties for the Book 7 release on July 20th, the night of. And Laura, Micah, Jamie, and I, along with Kevin, will all be in London for a huge book event. Right, Jamie?
We will, yeah. We are going to be at Waterstones Piccadilly Circus, central London. This bookstore is 6 stories and is bookstore in Europe, and they are expecting to their own party around 2,000 people. Now, I went to their Order of the Phoenix party a couple of years ago, and I mean, it was huge. They had this queue just went all the way around the block, and they had like entertainment. They had sort of all these jugglers going around. They had Harry Potter lookalikes. This thing was massive. Everyone was talking in the queue in costume. The atmosphere, it was a freezing cold night, and it was absolutely electric, the atmosphere. And they had celebrities turn up. They had Judi Dench. They had Sting.
She was there.
From the Police.
Oh, my gosh.
I love Judi Dench.
No, Sting's a he.
I was talking about Judi Dench. Not Sting. Not a retard.
Joey Sing's I.
Yeah. No, yeah. And they've got all these stuff planned. It's going to be unbelievable. And on top of that, we have been talking to them recently, and we are going to do a Book 7 podcast from Waterstones Piccadilly. It's going to start at 8 p.m. We're going to go for 2 hours, and then everyone who attends will then be able to join the queue and get their copy of Book 7. We can have 1,000 people to this podcast, and what they're doing is they're giving us an entire floor of Waterstones, and there are going to be TV screens all around the building, so you can watch it if you can't get on the main floor. I think the main floor holds about 800, so we'll have 800 here, and then other people around the...
It's the fourth floor.
The fourth floor. And then what they're doing is they're setting up an email address, and what you can do is you can email this email address, and they will mail you out tickets on lanyards, and then you wear it around your neck, and then they will let you in to see the podcast. Otherwise, you can't come in. So it's a pretty special event. And then after it, it'll finish about 10, and then after it, you can go down to the queue and enjoy their entertainment. It's going to be absolutely enormous. It's going to be the biggest one in England easily, and I can't think of anywhere in Europe where there's going to be a bigger one either. So we'll give you more details soon.
I get chills when I think about this. It's going to be amazing.
We're not kidding when we say it is
going to be absolutely massive.
J.K. Rowling's event, without a doubt, will be the biggest one, but we could dare say this is going to be the second biggest event in England.
I think more people are going to come to us, since hers is very closed off security, to be honest. She's only the author, Andrew.
I was trying to be a little modest.
Okay, sorry. No. Hers is going to be big, obviously, absolutely massive. But in terms of fan-made ones, this one is, seriously, if you're anywhere in the UK or continental Europe, we do suggest you come.
Or the world.
Yeah, or the world. Mars, if you're a Martian, just come down. It's only 18 billion miles or something. It's going to be worth it, seriously.
Well, there are a few Americans who do want to fly out to England to experience the release, and this is definitely a great place to do it. J.K. Rowling's event, not that we're saying it's going to be bad or anything, but we're just saying it's going to be very closed off. So you're going to have to go somewhere else.
Waterstones are doing all these kind of special deals for podcasts. People going for the podcast, they're going to give you a 10% discount on the deluxe book. They're making all these special shirts, which you can only buy on this night. It's going to be absolutely amazing. This thing is going to be the biggest party ever. So we'll be releasing more details soon. If you want tickets to this amazing, unbelievable, and probably the best day of your life event, am I selling it well?
Very well.
Okay.
Yes.
Email harrypotter@waterstones.com.
All one word.
We'll be providing a link on the website. Yeah, all one word. With how many tickets you'd like and your address, so they know where to send them to. Up to a maximum of 10 per person. And then they'll send your tickets out to you, so you'll have them on the day. It's up to 1,000 people, so get emailing as soon as you can, so you know that that you're going to get them and you can come. And
hey,
Andrew,
Jamie.
Yeah.
If I show up, will there be room for me?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You should tell us soon, though.
No, Eric, you can't come. You can't come, yeah. Eric. We're telling you you can't come.
Yeah, you can't come.
Yeah, you're going to be guest number 1001. Yeah.
And we should probably mention our grand prize for it, shall we, Andrew?
Yeah.
At this podcast, we're going to have a load of prizes to give away, a load of competitions, but our grand prize is a VIP all-expenses-paid trip to the podcast, which includes transport to the hotel, stay overnight attendance at the podcast, everything. Only for UKers, so please don't apply if you're in Mars, as we talked about before, or in the US or anywhere else on Earth. We'll be announcing details on how you can enter this competition and win this grand prize a week from now on episode 98. So listen to that.
So
and do come to this event, because you're going to really, really enjoy it.
Seriously, this is going to be a huge event. Laura, Micah, Kevin, and I, and Jamie too, we'll all be there. Laura and Micah, you guys excited? This is going to be your first trip to England, both of you, isn't it?
Yes. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I was hoping we would go so
bad. It's not.
Oh, Micah, it's not yours?
Oh yeah, Micah goes over there to visit Joe Weekly.
Right, I forgot.
No, it's going to be the first time over there, so I'm really looking forward to this. It sounds like a really good time, and I just can't wait.
It's going to be huge. We're not kidding. It's going
to
be huge.
You guys do have to promise me one thing, though, that you will play, and Jamie and I have talked about this, you will play The Final Countdown by Europe.
We should, yeah. We should do. Du-du-du-du-du. Or we could play White and Nerdy by Weird Al.
Can I get White and Nerdy? Yeah.
That, you know, just I thought about that, too. I thought, you know what, this totally does kind of blow away The Final Countdown for the final book.
It really does. I couldn't decide.
They see me mowing my front lawn.
No, they're just thinking I'm so wide and nerdy.
While they sing, full details will be available on... full details are available on MuggleNet.com now, right now. So go to MuggleNet.com or MuggleCast.com if you want to seek more information. Full details are on the site. Definitely come out. Deadline, I don't know if Jamie mentioned this, is July 13th at midnight. To request tickets because they have to mail them to you.
But we advise you email a long time before to guarantee you get in.
As
in this,
now.
We are selling this a lot, but it really will be an amazing event, so please, please come and see us.
So, and back Andrew, over... Yeah?
I have a question.
What?
Because this is such a big event, because, hey, it works, can we stamp this as episode 100?
Yeah, that was going to be the other thing. Yes, this is going to be episode... This live event, it's going to make me cry. It's going to be episode 100 of MuggleCast. Nice. It's perfect timing. It's going to be a huge. That makes it even bigger. 100 episodes. I mean, we've even done little shows. Technically, this could be episode 100, because we've done little mini shows.
Oh, wait,
before.
Guys. Holy. Wait, so what? Everyone's going to be there then except me, right?
No, Ben won't be
Laura,
there.
Laura, Micah, Kevin, Jamie, Andrew. Oh, yeah. Not Ben. I don't feel so bad.
Speaking of Ben, Ben, along with Emerson, will be in Chicago for a United States event at Oak Park in Chicago, right outside of Chicago, actually. For the past two books, Goblet of Fire, Order of the Phoenix and Half-Blood Prince, we've held huge events at this Oak Park place. And so if you're in the United States, if you're in the Chicago area, anywhere in that Midwest area, I guess it is, definitely check that out. Full details, again, are on MuggleNet.com. Of course, we can't promote that as much. For one, Ben's not on, so give us more details.
I love sell that a bit better. It's like we have this huge event at Waterstones. It's massive. You should definitely come along. And if you're in the Chicago area, you could pop in maybe if you fancy, you know.
I don't know what to say because I don't know details about it. It's full details.
Well, no, it's happened. Oak Park is a nice community area. I've been there. I was there for the Order of the Phoenix event when Emerson and Jamie were at the Waterstones. So yes. I was in Oak Park, and it's a great community area. They turn the main street there with the bookstore called the Magic Owl, I believe, or the Learned Owl. The Magic Tree. Magic Tree Bookstore. That's right.
How many people did they get, Eric, again? They got a lot of people.
They got about 10,000.
Yeah, so it's a huge event. It really is a big event, this thing. So, and they have a load of things, don't they? They have activities.
Yeah, all the shops are turned into, you know, all the shops of Diagon Alley, etc. I'm sure they've improved it since, you know, for book 6 and book 7 especially. It's going to be massive. So I don't know exactly what Ben and Emerson are doing there, but they'll be there, and you can guarantee there'll be MuggleNet stickers for everyone. And
full details will be on MuggleNet.com. They're on MuggleNet.com right now, along with the Chicago event. Emerson made up a nice little flyer that's going to be online. So check that out. Go to MuggleNet.com right now and get all the details about both events. They're both huge.
Yes, they are. Massive, in fact.
So that's what we're doing this summer. It's a lot of stuff.
It is.
And we hope to see everyone out there supporting the show and the website. So thank you, and of course we'll
That's
be talking
about it for this week's
of course, yeah,
it's been an hour.
That did take up the whole episode. I do want to say quickly, I just want to remind everyone that we are going to be at Enlightening 2007. We're also going to be at Prophecy. I know we've talked about those before. So again, visit MuggleCast.com for more details about those. Thank you very much. One final note. I'm sorry. I have to do this. One final note. Me, Jamie, and Kevin are going to be at the Order of the Phoenix premiere. We're going to be doing a podcast at the Piccadilly Theater. It's this huge theater in London. Jamie was very surprised when I told him this.
Very surprised.
It's a huge theater. We're going to be doing this, and it can hold about 1,200 people. So if you're going to be in London for the premiere, definitely come down.
Be again. Prepared to share a seat.
No. There's going to be plenty of room for everyone. MuggleNet.com once again for full details. All right, and finally, one last thing. The U.S. premiere. If you're going to be at the L.A. Harry Potter Order of the Phoenix premiere. We will be at the borders of Westwood, where we were for after the podcast awards. We're going to be there on July 9th, the day after the premiere, at 5 p.m. So definitely come down and check that out once again for the last time. Full details on MuggleNet.com. Hey, let's move on now. We have a show. We have a show to talk about.
We do.
For everyone else who doesn't care. We have some rebuttals this week. Laura, you want to take the first one?
Okay. The first one comes from Mark 30 from Ireland. He says, in episode 96, you spoke briefly about when, in Order of the Phoenix, Bellatrix tells Voldemort, he is here, he is below. It was suggested that she was referring to Sirius Black. I always believed that she was referring to Dumbledore. She was warning Voldemort that Dumbledore, the only one he ever feared, was here in the Ministry, and that he was below in the Department of Mysteries.
But isn't that...
That does make sense.
It does, but...
It's true.
Isn't that the ambiguity about it? It could be Dumbledore, it could be Harry, it could be Sirius, it could be...
I don't think it's Harry.
I don't think it's Harry, because Harry was right there.
Yeah. Ah, but perhaps... Okay, I have to dig myself out of this hole now. Perhaps she was trying to trick him.
To trick
She doesn't
Voldemort.
Really like Voldemort because he turned down her marriage proposal. So she wants to annoy him now.
Jamie, are you familiar with the post-secret books? Post-secret? Have you ever...
I'm not, no.
Okay, never mind then. Forget it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think she was definitely referring to Dumbledore. I mean, there's really no question about it in my mind.
Yeah, well, last week, though, we were talking like...
Okay, see, I have no clue where this rebuttal came from, so...
I'm pretty sure this one was Jamie's fault. Also, we have another email from Monica. I'm just kidding, but...
No, I think it is
my fault. Credit for it, that's fine. Okay, yeah, it wasn't my fault. Monica from Virginia writes... with the subject Malfoy's embarrassing items. She writes, I was just reading Chamber of Secrets again, and when Lucius says, I have a few items at home that might embarrass me if the Ministry were to call, end quote, it makes me think that he might be harboring a Horcrux somewhere in his mansion. He seems to have a hiding place there, as the Ministry didn't find anything during the raid, and Lucius was holding the diary before. What do you think,
this.
Eric?
Wait, do they say I mentioned this? Because I told this whole story and made those exact same conclusions in episode 95, I think. Because I was rereading Chamber of Secrets, and I said his drawing room floor. But, okay, I'll stop being indignant and say yes. Don't know if Lucius has any more Horcruxes, because he already had the diary, but I do think that possibly we will be able to see the Malfoy Mansion as a setting in one of the books. And I think I asked you guys that.
I don't know. You probably did. I'm sure you did.
Laura, do you remember me asking you this?
No.
Whatever. Could have dreamed it out.
That's okay, Eric. We trust you. We trust you, Eric.
If it wasn't on an episode, I'm sorry.
But isn't the whole point with this that when Lucius says, do you think you could hurry up, Borg, and I have important business elsewhere, isn't that the whole thing? He knows he's going to go and dump the diary, and he says, I have a few items at home. And didn't someone say certain poisons he's got? Didn't he mention in some other book that it was poisons and dark magic stuff? He did, definitely. I can't remember which book it is. But a Horcrux is a good bet. But I don't see why Voldemort would want it in someone's house that he knows. You know, he doesn't trust these people. They're not his friends.
Yeah.
The only reason Lucius had the diary was because of, you know, a possible future plan that they were kind of working on.
Yeah.
And Voldemort fell before it happened. And even then, Lucius supposedly didn't know... the full potential of the diary, just that it would open up the Chamber of Secrets. And obviously, when it got destroyed, that's why Voldemort was so angry.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Interesting, though. Very interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Plus, also, let's not forget, once Lucius Malfoy left and Harry remained, Mr. Borgen, I believe it was, said something, muttered, under, you know, something to the effect of, rumors are there's more hidden than what
twice
you're... Twice as much as what you're trying to sell me. So, could be.
Interesting.
It is interesting.
Well, we are going to move on now to a whole bunch of voicemails. A lot of you have been calling in our wonderful voicemail numbers. 1-2-1-8-20 Magic. I don't remember the other two. I doubt anyone else does.
020-844-0677. I remember that one.
Wow.
No, that wasn't it, was it?
I've heard you say it 50 million times.
We changed that number, Laura.
Yeah, we just changed
it. Just so that you would sound intelligent and you would be able to say.
Sure you did.
Okay, well, let's get to the first voicemail now.
Hey, Mugglecasters, this is Brett from Memphis, Tennessee. I was calling in because I had a theory about the Horcruxes. Basically, I was just wondering if you thought it was possible that there were only 5 Horcruxes ever made. My reasoning for this is a couple things. First off, Thor says that Voldemort was trying to make his final Horcrux out of Harry. So I just don't think Voldemort's the kind of person that would give up on doing something. Like, it would almost be like admitting defeat if he was like, oh, I can't make Harry Potter my death for a Horcrux, so I'm going to do it for someone else. My second reason is just that he's supposed to save all his Horcrux makings for really significant deaths, and the caretaker of the Riddle House, Frank, I don't see him as being a very significant death. Just wanted to see what you guys think. Love the show. Keep it up. And that's it. Bye.
Every life is important, Brett. But isn't this like... You'd think that if he was planning on making Harry out of one, then yeah, that's completely possible. If he was saving it, and didn't Dumbledore specifically say he reserved Horcruxes for important deaths, so he planned these things, you know, when he was going to make it. So it's entirely possible that he only made 5 plus his soul. Harry was going to be the 6, 7 plus his soul. So then, but then he didn't make it, obviously, because it backfired on him.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that definitely Harry would be... plenty significant, just because, you know, to say that he made his last Horcrux out of the one person who could have destroyed
completely, it. Completely, yeah. But also, yeah. Do you think he went to the house knowing what kind of power this person would have? So, like, you know, saying that...
No,
saying
he didn't.
But I mean, if he says, like, you know, one has the power to vanquish you, does that mean one, when he grows up and has finished his formal education, has the power to vanquish you? Or one has, like, just... And, you know, innate mutation that when you walk into the same room as him, you vaporize. So perhaps he went there, you know, thinking, I need my full power in case Harry has something about him now that I need to battle. And also, you think, if 7 is the most powerful magical number, and he did think that he had to go there with full power in case Harry was super powerful, then you'd think he'd make all 7 beforehand so that he was as powerful as he possibly could be, so there was no chance of him being defeated by Harry.
Yeah.
Even at that early stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
No, exactly. And we've also come to the conclusion that maybe... I think Dumbledore even came to the conclusion that Voldemort didn't have 7 Horcruxes at the time of his downfall. Because...
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure that's canon. I'm almost positive that's canon.
Well, that completely throws out my theory. I should be a better fan.
Well, no, I mean, I could be wrong, but I actually think that was one of the most interesting things about the books. That you know, because he had 4 or 5 and then made Nagina, possibly, or Nagini, and, you know, something else.
Yeah.
Even if he was going to make Harry the 7th or the 6th Horcrux, therefore having 7 pieces of soul.
The thing that I'd say is that if Harry's the only thing that can bring your downfall, why would you use him to your own ends? Wouldn't you just want him out of the way as soon as possible? You know,
the prophecy said the Dark Lord will mark him as his equal. That doesn't mean he's going to mark him by trying to kill him. Or,
no, it just means he thinks that he's his equal, yeah.
Yeah. He thinks that he views him as powerful enough to destroy
him. Precisely, yeah. And also, like, Voldemort's, you know, proud, but I think his pride has to come second to his staying in power. And he'd much rather create 7 and then just go and get rid of Harry for sure.
You think it's possible that maybe his pride could sometimes get in the way?
Completely, absolutely, I completely agree. Yeah. I think it's one of his weaknesses, just like Dumbledore's, was that he trusted people too easily. I think pride and vanity is one of Voldemort's, and his fear of death is obviously three very, very bad things. It's like he has trophies, you know, the Ravenclaw, Slytherin, and Hufflepuff.
Yeah. Well, so was Harry's scar Voldemort's marking him, or was that something else entirely?
That's
the result of
I agree with Laura.
Failed killing curse.
Yeah, but the failed killing curse only resulted because the prophecy had something to do with Voldemort enacting the prophecy,
which had something to do with Harry having the power. The scar was the result of Lily's love for Harry.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you, Laura, that it's... Marking can just mean, you know, like, I could mark... I don't know, someone as a threat just by thinking that they're a threat. You know, you've marked him.
Though it's been said that when Harry tried to, or when Voldemort tried to kill Harry, he transferred powers unwittingly Harry or some similarities.
He did.
What do you mean he did?
I'm saying he did.
Oh, okay.
But how does that what does that have to do with marking him as his equal? It was.
It has everything.
Well, no,
to do with
it was. It was just a mistake as a result.
Jerry.
Yeah.
Jerry.
Well, no, just a lot of weird crap happened, and we still don't know about the scar.
That is true.
But Dumbledore seemed pretty confident that they're really six, right? Isn't that what he said?
At this point, I don't know. I just don't. I mean, just looking at it from a literary perspective, I don't see why we would be led to believe that he did have a total of seven, including his soul, and then be told, oh, wait, by the way, he didn't really. So,
yeah,
you
that,
know,
that is
it just
true.
Seems
yeah.
a bit
yeah.
weird to me.
That is very true.
Well, we weren't told that he had seven, were we? We were just told that he was after.
Well, that he was after seven, but it just seems sort of anticlimactic in a way. Like,
yeah.
he was striving for it and he didn't even get it.
Yeah.
But why would Harry be a Horcrux, though? I mean, I don't. I well, never understood that.
He's not really saying that Harry's a Horcrux. It just seems like he was trying to use Harry to make a Horcrux.
Oh, no, definitely, because Dumbledore says that. When he tells Harry about the Horcruxes, he says... No, he tells Harry that Voldemort went to Godric's Hollow with the intention of making Harry the final Horcrux.
Right.
And I thought there was a moment in the office, too, that Harry starts to pose the question as to whether he is a Horcrux, and Dumbledore says no. Do you guys remember that?
I kind of
really?
Remember that, yeah. But it's just not... It wasn't strong enough, because Dumbledore you know, at the end of book two, was contemplating it's so finely touched upon when Dumbledore tells Harry that he unwittingly transferred some of his powers, and that is no doubt why you have a troublemaking side. But then we learned his father had a troublemaking side too, and also the Sorting Hat about wanting to put Harry in Slytherin because of all his Voldemort similarities or not. The choice is overruling that.
The parcel tongue.
if Harry is a Horcrux, wouldn't Voldemort be taking a risk by trying to kill him twice?
You know, Andrew, what does MuggleNet.com
in book five,
what will happen in Harry Potter book 7 say about this?
Yeah, I never read it.
Because you know what?
I mean,
Jamie, you wrote part of that book. What do they say about Horcruxes? And if Harry's a Horcrux or not? I'm pretty sure I could pull up Emerson. Okay, good, just go.
We believe that Harry is a Horcrux. You'd have to read the actual book, but it is a very, very convincing argument. I can't remember exactly what we put down, because I didn't personally write that chapter, but it is a pretty convincing argument.
Thank you.
I don't think Harry's a Horcrux, but
Ben's tried.
Lori.
Next time Ben's on the show, we'll have him.
You can't
talk
say that.
About it.
I'm not on the cover. I can say what I want.
No, you can. You can. You're in the book. No, seriously, you can't say that. I don't think he's a Horcrux, but I didn't write that. But
well, I don't really think it matters what our personal opinions are. I think people.
No, I do appreciate Jamie's loyalty or sense of loyalty.
Oh, it's not loyalty. It's just. Because I don't agree with that. It's just that I don't think we should publicly say I don't agree with a book that I helped write. But I don't care enough, Laura, really. So
okay.
Say what the hell you like.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Let's next voicemail now.
Hi, guys. This is Jessica. I'm 16 from St. Louis, Missouri. I'm in the middle of listening to episode 96, and you just brought up a point that maybe Voldemort made a Horcrux out of Mourning Myrtle's death. Well, I was wondering if that was even possible because he didn't actually do the act of killing. He set the basilisk on her. So I don't really know if he could actually make a Horcrux out of Mourning Myrtle's death. Just want to know what you guys thought about that. Love the show. Jamie's my favorite. Bye.
Can I take this one?
Yes. If, yeah, go on.
No, sorry, go on.
Well, yes, if our discussion a couple weeks ago was to be believed, where we were studying what it takes to actually make a Horcrux out of something, correct?
Yeah.
And you have to be present for the killing, and then actually there's some spell or some way to encapsulate the soul.
No, but
I
was just going to say, the reason it has to be you is that you have to split your soul, and that can only be achieved by you doing the killing. I'd say, you know, you have to have like a guilty mind and do the killing for it to, because you know it's a violation of nature, right. So you have to violate
you
nature
personally.
Exactly, you have to violate nature.
Setting the basilisk on her, though, that's why it's interesting. Setting the basilisk, just commanding the basilisk to kill her, that's like commanding a firing squad to kill somebody. I mean,
no,
but it was
Eric,
almost like the basilisk was an instrument. I kind of wonder how much accountability is taken into consideration when
but if
something
I told
like this is done.
If I told you to tell Eric, to tell Micah, to tell Andrew, to tell Emerson,
this is not to tell Ben, the Goblet of Fire movie.
It's not that long-winded, though.
To kill like a random person, I wouldn't be guilty of it. I couldn't split myself from that. I think actually perform the killing.
You
can't really compare that, though, because Riddle had complete control over the basilisk.
Exactly. All he says is, he commands a giant snake to attack a girl.
But he isn't actually doing it, though. You know, saying go and kill him.
But his malice,
But I guess the thing is, I know he's got malice, but he isn't doing it. He isn't killing anyone.
The difference is that he means it, though. I think whenever
he does
you
mean
would,
it.
If you turn to Andrew and say, "Andrew, go kill Laura," I would hope that you were kidding. But
no, Laura, I'm a serial killer. You can see it in my eyes.
You can, absolutely. You can. But if Tom Riddle or Lord Voldemort turns to somebody and says, "Kill them," he's completely not joking. He's completely
serious. Of course
serious.
He isn't. He isn't. But I just
we're just wondering if it splits your soul. I mean.
I'm just wondering.
It's a proxy killing. It's like I don't see
how precise it is. I suppose
exactly. Yeah, it doesn't. It's like if I just don't think if you actually kill someone, then you know that you're violating nature. By I think it depends if the violation of nature is what splits your soul, or whether it's the sort of decision to kill someone. Because if you stab someone and that killed them, if the stabbing is the thing that splits your soul, then perhaps you do have to do it. But if, as you say, and it's a very good point, that it's the malice, you know, intent that you have, the sort of guilty mind of doing it, then perhaps it's that that splits your soul, or perhaps it's the ability to be able to kill that can do it.
I know you can have malice, but then there's what actually takes to do the unforgivable curses. What I'm saying though is that commanding the basilisk to kill Moaning Myrtle is killing Moaning Myrtle, as far as I'm concerned. I think that should have been powerful enough to split a soul, because you are sending the big snake on this girl. I think that is strong enough, not just a utility or a tool, but I think that was strong. That should be strong enough to split Voldemort's soul.
Yeah,
I don't think that
anything. That's true.
You know, not just thinking about it and being evil enough to possibly do it won't. But if you, I still think it should count when he set the snake on her. That was killing.
Right.
That was him killing her.
Okay, are we ready for the next one?
Yep.
Hey, MuggleCast. This is Ma. I'm 14 and I live in North Carolina. My question is. In the 2005 interview with J.K. Rowling, Emerson asked Joe what Dumbledore would see if he looked in the mirror of Air's Ed. Joe couldn't answer this question, which obviously means that what Dumbledore wanted more than anything was not for Voldemort to be defeated. If he didn't want that, what do you think Dumbledore did want more than anything? Could this have something to do with the Gleam of Triumph? Tell me what you think. Thanks. Bye.
Do you really think so, though?
Yeah.
What was all of that?
Well, I think what she's saying is that if Dumbledore's greatest wish was for Voldemort to be defeated, why would she have to be so secretive about it?
Wouldn't Dumbledore, as a person who is typically known as seeing the wider picture, realize that evil isn't vanquished just because one evil person is vanquished? Voldemort's just, Grindelwald sounds very, very deadly, and he, for all we know, could be more powerful than Voldemort. If you take the prophecy to be gospel, then Dumbledore couldn't, one interpretation of the prophecy, if you take that to be gospel, then Dumbledore couldn't defeat Voldemort, so it could be that Voldemort isn't as powerful as Grindelwald.
That's very intelligent.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Eric.
Yeah, I really don't think that... I don't think that she was doing that just to kind of leave the question open. I think that what Dumbledore would want most is significant. As for it applying to the gleam of triumph that we saw in his eye, I'm not sure. I mean, that could have been for a million different reasons, but I think that generally, overall, Dumbledore just wants a peaceful world. I don't think he really wants more than that.
I could see it just being something as simple as... I mean...
Yeah, but if you remember...
Maybe he didn't see anything. Maybe he just saw himself. Maybe he isn't affected by something.
But didn't
like
he
that.
Say that only the happiest man on Earth would see himself as he is? And I don't think... I don't know. I just don't see him as the happiest man on Earth. But if you'll remember in Sorcerer's Stone, Harry asked Dumbledore what he saw himself as in the Mirror of Erised, and he said he saw himself holding a pair of socks, but Harry got the distinct impression that he was lying.
Of course. That's what Dumbledore does. And Harry was too young to understand, even if he wanted to tell him the truth, so...
Hey, MuggleCast. This is Emily, 14, from New York. I'm calling in regards to the symbol on the spine of the UK children's edition of Deathly Hallows. I was on the Leaky Lounge recently, and I came across a new theory about it. Someone suggested that it's the wand movement used to make a Horcrux, with each shape a different part of casting the spell. The circle is for the piece of soul being preserved, the triangle symbolizes the object in which the soul is encapsulated, and the line is the splitting of the soul. I'm not exactly sure how this fits in with the Delta Phi and White Marble, but anyway, this isn't my theory. All the credit goes to the person on the Leaky Lounge. In any case, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this. I love your show. Keep up the awesome work. Bye. Pickles.
That's a great theory. I like that.
It is awesome, yeah.
That actually is a very good theory. Again, whoever came up with it, but
I mean, it is. I like that a lot. It does appear to be engraved on something, like on the spine. It was like on that marble, and there was some debate over, well, what is it? Is it on? Is it on Dumbledore's tomb? But then some people shot that down. Is it on somewhere we haven't seen yet? So, I mean, even if it is engraved on something, I guess it could still suggest what you have to do. I'm just trying to think how they would discover that. Like, here's the symbol. What do we do with it?
It's Horcrux.
It reminds me of, like,
it's sort of like when they hand out papers in class with instructions on how to do something.
I guess, but it's not like step one, circle, step two, triangle.
Hold wand between two fingers.
Right.
Step two, kill
someone.
But this
does remind me of...
step three.
Shout out to all you N64 fans out there. There's a Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time where you would get these little things on how to play your Ocarina. And then...
Ocarina? Yeah.
No, not the Macarena.
Sorry, I was just playing the original Legend of Zelda on Game Boy Advance. They did the NES version of it, and I have the original Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, yeah.
Very hard. Very hard game.
Jamie, have you ever done the Macarena?
No, I have, yeah. Embarrassingly enough.
I was just going to say, Pickleback content this week.
What, the Macarena?
Yeah, why not?
That was a one-hit wonder.
It really was.
It was, yeah.
I listen to it every day, still.
Okay.
But, any other theories about that theory? I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, it's really fabulous. Idea, yeah.
Joe, any comments?
Joe?
Did
you say Joe?
I did.
No, she's keeping quiet. Come on, Joe, it's your first time on the show.
Oh, yes, that's an excellent theory. I like that theory.
Is it true, though, Joe?
Oh,
thumbs
my God.
Up to the Leaky Lounge. I can't say anything yet.
She would feel insulted.
I told you, we should have a long time ago, we should have had a British woman on the show just to throw everyone off. It's too late to do it now. But don't you guys think it's cool that Show 100 is on the DH release? Come on.
It is awesome, yeah.
Yeah, it couldn't be
in
better.
In London, no doubt.
Back in August 2005, we actually planned it that way. We were like, yeah, we're going to skip a show this week.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Jamie's going to
slack off
the wrong
many weeks.
Train times this week, which will then add two extra shows. Yeah. So by July...
We got it. Yeah. Tattooed on our bodies, so we just know exactly when,
good stuff. So we will have more voicemails soon, and we will get to the hotline numbers at the end of the show if you're interested in calling in your question. We are going to dueling club segment now. This was sent in to me the other day. Hey, Andrew, I have an idea for a possible Dueling Club-esque debate you guys could do on the show. Maybe for the 100th episode. Okay, well, we're doing it now. In a pranking slash mischief-making competition, who would win, Fred and George or a young James and Sirius? It could be a fun debate. I was thinking about it the other day, and I couldn't decide myself. Of course, you would have to think of it in a hypothetical universe where they're the same age and the latter aren't dead, but you probably knew that. Yes.
I love this person already. Tennyson?
Jamie, that was just to prevent you from saying, well, James and Sirius won't be doing much joking.
Exactly.
I was going to.
Our listeners are well trained. Wow.
That's very good, Eric. That's something he would say.
They are well trained. Well done.
This comes from Isabel of Seattle, Washington. So,
great city.
I think James and Sirius would have more knowledge. Fred and George aren't the brightest bulbs in the boxes.
I kind of got the idea that James and Sirius were a bit more malicious than Fred and George.
Yeah,
you don't really
see
them doing so much pranking as just picking on people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, exactly.
And Fred and George would be like good joke
Jokers, like, they'd always have a comeback and they'd always know what to say. So, you know, and they work so well together. And even though James and Sirius
do as well.
And they never
got mad. Like, James and Sirius always got so upset and hot-headed, and Fred and George keep their
cool. I actually agree with that. I'm saying Fred and George because they're the pranksters. James and Sirius.
Oh, steady.
James and Sirius were, you know, the troublemakers. Not necessarily the pranksters, but the troublemakers. They were the actual
ones who
caused trouble. I think, you know, Fred and George might have a better sense of humor or a better, you know, ability to... I mean, they test their own product on themselves. You know, James and Sirius might not actually, like, do that. Like,
yeah.
Fred and George are the pranksters, I think. They're just so much better. They have a shop. They've always been fascinated with that kind of, you know, prank, good-hearted fun. Whereas James and Sirius kind of, you know, go wherever the wind blows them.
Anyway the wind blows.
Anyway the wind blows.
Guess that's true.
Okay.
Eric.
Yes.
Crackpot Theory. Are you ready?
Yes.
I just pulled this out of my email real quick. Alyssa, 16 in Norway, says, Snape is the real Dark Lord and Voldemort is just a puppet created and used by him. A go. Yeah.
Eric, stop stalling. Do it.
Snape is... Okay, Snape is actually the real Voldemort because...
The real Dark Lord, and Voldemort is just a puppet created and used by him.
Yes, okay. Well, Voldemort is a puppet, and you can tell that by the original trailer pictures of Goblet of Fire. There's a little, you know, kind of baby-looking thing. Snape lives on Spinner's End, and that's actually a pun used by JKR because she's been spinning this web of deceit, and of course at the end of the series you will learn the actual truth.
Not bad at all.
I was waiting for you to say that Voldemort was a puppet as seen on the Potter Puppet Show, but...
No, but also he sort of looks like a puppet. He sort of, especially on the Order of the Phoenix teaser poster, he's sort of like... He doesn't look like he has a full body.
Actually,
he
looks like Kermit the Frog to me, but...
Sort of does. And he's got his hand, like, sticking out like a puppet would if you were to hold out that stick that holds out the hand. But, no, that's very crackpot and probably absolutely not true at all. If you have a crackpot theory for Eric, email it in to the MuggleCast feedback
Why hasn't
form.
This segment been destroyed?
And make it as crackpot as possible.
Yeah, Eric will not read it. But here's the thing. When you email in a crackpot theory, for one, put in the subject line crackpot theory. Second of all, put your crackpot theory and then list your ways of proving it. So then we'll read it after his. Let me actually read Alyssa's proof for this. She writes, I know, it's not impossible. It is impossible, but I don't know. J.K. Rowling loves to use red herrings, and Snape had Half-Blood Prince, which is like the first half of Deathly Hallows, namely after him. That means that he's a very, very significant character. Plus, wouldn't it be like an incredible plot twist if Voldemort turned out to be just a phantom of some sort controlled by Snape? So that was her defense.
Now we go to make the connection, where you have to make a random connection between Harry Potter and something. It could be anything. So, Laura, your one this week is Harry Potter and replacing $1 bills with minuscule hamsters.
Okay.
It could be anything.
It could be anything.
Come on, Laura, snap.
Well, I mean, Fred and George did replace people's wands with those fake wands that turned into other things. So, I mean, you never know. Somebody... I don't know. All I get is the replacement aspect of this journey.
So one day you can pull out a dollar bill and, oops, there's a hamster.
Precisely, yeah. Exactly.
Courtesy of Fred and George.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty good. Jamie, it's just times like this when I wonder, like, wait, I don't know.
What he thinks about during the day?
I just... I really do. Like, I wonder, like, anytime I'm talking to you and your I am window goes completely idle, I'm like, what's he thinking about? if he comes up with stuff like replacing dollar bills with hamsters. But yeah, I mean, that's all I've got. Just Fred and George replacing the wands with the fake wands.
That's pretty good. That was pretty good. I would say that the aspect of replacing $1 bills with minuscule hamsters is taking something you know and trust dearly. Like, you trust that you put your hand into your pocket and take out a $1 bill, and replacing it with something you aren't so keen on and aren't used to. So I think that Harry being thrust into the wizarding life
could be, you know, he's used to waking up in his closet, but I think that could be one of them.
But Jamie, that's an ill comparison, because you were talking about last time how we've got to do it correctly, and from yes. the $1 bill aspect, you're talking about a person's trust being deceived, and from the other, you're talking about Harry's
not
reaction
deceived.
Being thrown
no,
into the
I'm,
world.
No, I'm just talking about things, the expectation of normality,
whatever,
and the
you're wrong.
And the replacement.
You're wrong.
Okay, fine, I accept that. Okay, Micah, yours is Harry Potter and Elvis flying a UFO into the Yeti.
Oh my god.
Into a Yeti. Into the Yeti. Oh, well, clearly, if you go back to Chamber of Secrets, Harry and Ron flew a car into the Whomping Willow, so that's about all I can do with that.
I like that. Very much. Very, very much. Okay, Andrew?
Yes.
This relates to a video you saw today, so if you don't get this, you know, it's going to be slightly disappointing. Your connection is Harry Potter.
I'm trying to think about which videos I've seen today.
You've seen a lot. This one is Harry Potter and buying an iPhone and dropping it the minute you get it out.
Let me set this up first. There's this hilarious video on YouTube. The iPhone just came out yesterday, and there's this awesome video on YouTube where this guy, it's very windy out, the guy opens his iPhone up, brand new, and the first thing that happens is the iPhone just flies out and lands on concrete. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. But anyway...
can I get a link to that? Because that's really
yeah. We'll put that in the show notes. Show notes. It's actually on Dig. It's so sad. I feel bad for him. And then after that, there's a clip that shows him buying a case for it. But the iPhone still works, thankfully. Anyway, I guess the connection you can make between this is that it's dumb luck. You know, you're always looking forward to a big event like this. Like, say Harry was looking forward to one of his Quidditch matches. Remember the Dementors took over by, you know, sweeping in and sort of they got in the way and he crashed and all that. So, I mean, I guess there's a lot of examples in Harry Potter where there's a big event or there's something that someone was really looking forward to and then all of a sudden, you're done.
Very good.
But narrowly escaped. As this guy in the YouTube video, he did escape. His iPhone was okay.
He did, yeah.
Harry was okay. And I cannot wait to buy an iPhone myself.
Very good. Eric?
Yep.
Your connection is between Harry Potter and a tsunami of chocolate milk.
All right. The tsunami of chocolate milk will probably be caused by seismic activity deep in the heart of the chocolate ocean. And seismic activity, as we know, comes from the center of the Earth. Obviously, the rotating core of the Earth causes shifting tectonic plates and creates the magnetic field and all sorts of basic tremors and things that cause earthquakes, as did the tsunami of the Malaysia region on Christmas 2004. Now,
very
the
good, Eric, very
tsunami.
Good.
Now, in a chocolate, examples, in a scenario of chocolate tsunami, or in any scenario, if it's a tsunami, it could be caused very really by an earthquake. And I was thinking about that as it related to the core of the Earth, and it just really made me more excited for Deathly Hallows, really, because we've got another book with Lupin surviving in it, and Lupin is best known for his chocolate, and chocolate is supposed to give you warm, fuzzy thoughts, which
Wings.
The book series could do well with some of, and they'll be going to what we've speculated, the core of the Earth, or at least underground, where Gringotts is. And that could be where something happens that causes a great big shift and in the tectonic plates, and there could be a collision somewhere. And in the world of chocolatiers, and the Nesquik and Cocoa Puff bird, that could be a serious problem for some of them. I don't think a lot of people are coming up with a lot of the ramifications that Harry Potter Book 7 might have on the advertising world.
Okay, Eric, you win.
God.
It's very good. Very, very good indeed. I'm very impressed.
God. I think this segment is now called Make the Century, as opposed to Make the Connection.
Well, if it replaces my crackpot theory, I don't mind, because I totally had no idea what to do.
That's good, though.
Thank you.
Do you want to joke?
Is that it? Is that everyone?
Yes.
Jamie, you got a British joke to wrap up your...
I've got two jokes. Okay.
there was this Packers fan with a really crappy seat at Lambeau, is that it? Looking with his binoculars, he spotted an empty seat on the 50-yard line, thinking to himself, what a waste, he made his way down to the empty seat. Now, when he arrived at this seat, he asked the man sitting next to it, is this seat taken? The man replied, this was my wife's seat. She passed away. She was a big Packers fan. The other man replied, I'm so sorry to hear of your loss. May I ask why you didn't give the ticket to a friend or a relative? The man replied, they're all at the funeral. And one last one. And this sort of makes fun of one state. The only reason I've picked this state, Andrew, is because you live there. So it isn't, I don't think, anything bad thing about this state. In fact, I love this state. So, the National Transportation Safety Board recently divulged that they had covertly funded a project with the U.S. automakers for the past 5 years, whereby the automakers were installing black box voice recorders in pickup trucks. This was done in an effort to determine when accidents occurred, the circumstances in the last 15 seconds before the crash. They were surprised to find in 49 of the 50 states, the last words of drivers in 61.2% of crashes were, "Oh no!" Only the state of New Jersey was different, where 89.3% of the final words were, "Hold my beer and watch this."
I've heard that joke before. That's not true. New Jersey's not the armpit of America that everyone seems to think
it
is.
Sounds like Georgia, but
didn't your dad
sounds like my state. Says like half the listeners, yeah.
Well, let's wrap things up today with a final chicken soup here. This one comes from Joe, 19, of Sweckley, Pennsylvania. Hey guys and Laura, I had the honor, please note the sarcasm, of being selected for jury duty and had to report for it last Monday. From talking to neighbors and such about how I had to go, they told me that it would be one of the most boring days of my life. They then told me to bring a book or something to do to keep myself busy for the day. We all know where this is going. I got to the courthouse a little before 8 a.m. and basically sat there doing nothing until a little after 4 p.m. Oh, that stinks. Luckily, I brought my iPod and had many episodes of MuggleCast on there to keep me busy during those long, horrible, and dull hours. I also received many stares from the older crowd of people around me. I'm 19, as I sat there in the lounge chuckling to myself. At one point, I literally laughed out loud and had three-quarters of the room staring at me when Andrew made that awesome joke, basically on every episode he's ever been on. The one person sitting next to me asked what I was listening
Which
to.
Which joke do you make on everyone?
Like a variety, like, you know, different ones every week. The one person sitting next to
me... I'm sorry, I thought she said one specific joke. Sorry, go
on. No, it's a he, but yeah. The one person sitting next to me asked what I was listening to since I was laughing, and I told her that I was listening to MuggleCast, which is a Harry Potter podcast, and she told me that she was also obsessed with Harry Potter. The both of us discussed what we thought would happen to the boy wizard, as well as the many theories we supported. So I just wanted to thank you guys so much for making what was supposed to be one of the most boring days of my life, one that was very relaxing and enjoyable. You guys are keeping my spirits up. I just found out we were leaving for Italy on July 20th, the day before HP7 comes out, for a three-week vacation. Oh, and he could stop by our big event. So thanks for everything you do and for keeping a smile on my face. Thanks again, and keep up the fantastic work.
Can I just say,
Sweckley, Pennsylvania.
I'm extremely jealous because I want to do jury service. I really, really, really would love
you
to do
that.
I want like a really complex case. I want a murder case or treason.
You are
like,
not, sir.
International espionage or war crimes or crimes against humanity. But I know I'm going to get something rubbish. How about you, Laura? What case do you want?
Oh, well, anything along those lines, but knowing me, I would get some BS, like stole a CD from the local store.
Today on the People's Court. Yeah. Some crap. You know,
I want to be on...
stole my...
Have you ever wanted to be on Judge Judy? I've always wanted to be on Judge Judy.
That'd be great.
Just start your own show.
But anyway.
Start your own show.
No.
Judge Laura.
No. I want to be on Judge Judy. I want to be one of the psychos.
No. You don't. The cases are so sort of like immature and childish. It's like he stole my CDs. I saw one when like this mother stole her daughter's boyfriend's CDs or something like that. What? How can anyone go to court over that?
Oh, gosh.
If you're listening
know, Jamie,
now,
you stole my
sad.
Hair thing last summer. You
I stole
you never
what?
Gave it back. My hair thing. You stole it. You never gave it back. I'm going to see
what they call it. Claims court.
No joke. You had a hair thing of mine. You never gave it back.
I stole it on purpose. I smell it every night just before I go to bed.
Guys, gross. Let's do something here. Let's just participate in something called Making It Real. Guys, by the end of this month, Harry Potter 7 will be out.
I know. It's very scary.
But by the end of this month, we'll know everything that ever happens in Harry Potter. I think I floored you guys with that.
In a month from now,
at the end of this month, we will know what happens
in Harry Potter 7.
And we'll also know if Harry Potter 5 is a good movie or not, but, you know.
I know, it's unbelievable.
It's so close, it's not even funny. Like, can you imagine, like, just how long have you been Harry Potter fans and not known how it would all end?
I know, it's crazy.
Anyway,
I know.
That's it.
Okay.
No, but we do want to remind everyone about our contact information. Then we'll have a little more banter, of course. You can contact the P.O. Box. Laura, how do people mail stuff via P.O. Box?
You can mail stuff to P.O. Box 3151, Cumming, Georgia, 30028. I'm kind of amazed because nobody burst into laughter when I said it this time. It's awesome. I was waiting for it because usually Jamie just loses it.
Sure, here.
Yeah, right.
We do want to remind everyone you can contact us via telephone also. If you're in the United States, you can dial 1-218-20-MAGIC. If you're in the United Kingdom, you can dial 020-8144-0677. If you're in Australia, you can dial 028-003-5668. And who knows, maybe your voicemail will be on the next MuggleCast. Try to keep the questions general. Don't go off on some silly theory or something that's absurd. Come on, just admit it to yourself. No, because then we just won't play it.
Be sarcastic. There'll be more chance of
getting
on.
Or you can Skype the username MuggleCast, that's MuggleCast, on Skype. Just remember, for either calling or Skype message, keep your message under a minute long and eliminate as much background noise as possible. You can also visit MuggleCast.com for a handy feedback form to contact any one of us, or just use our first name at staff.mugglenet.com. We also have the community outlets, of course. We got the MySpace, the Frapper, the Facebook, the YouTube, the Last.fm, fan listing, and forums over at mugglecastfan.net. MySpace, myspace.com/mugglecastfans. You can also dig the show at dig.com. Vote for us once a month at Podcast Alley. It's a new month, so make sure you do that. Well, it will be a new month very soon. Oh, no, it is a new month. Happy July, everyone. Happy July. And also rate and review us at Yahoo Podcasts and on iTunes, of course. That's about it. I'm in Jamie's room, and I want to get out of here.
I want to break free. Don't you, Andy?
Yes, I do.
Why do we get out of that? What's wrong with
that? It's a little cramped. It's a little too blue. I like the pink room that you're in right now.
Oh, do you, Andrew? You a big fan of the pink?
Pink's sort of my color. Pink's sort of my color. So, thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you. Seriously, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you. Thank you. Just
and
you. Thank you.
And listeners like you,
thank we should you do like spending a, your time listening to this.
No, on our final show, we should do like a graduation read out everyone's name who ever listened.
Every single like, listener.
John Smith. Thank you. Tom Jones.
Yeah, we'll
thank
do that for
John
Kirsty Smith.
For episode,
did John Smith listen
for episode to our 101, show? Our final show, please email your name and we'll read it. And thank you.
Definitely.
Just kidding. Episode 101 is not our last show. Please don't complain.
We're going to have so much
fun. That's episode 102.
Yes.
Episode 102. We'll ever be able to end the show, guys. Do you really think we'll ever be able to end the show,
yes,
though? We will
absolutely.
Do like 1 year anniversary of the closing. We'll all come back.
Yeah, we should.
We'll have like kids. Our children will be on.
To be
you're going to have kids the 1 year anniversary?
No,
Eric?
I mean 5 year anniversary, like 10 year anniversary. We're never going to be able to like. We'll always be updating the feed.
To be honest.
We'll miss this so much.
Yeah. To be honest, I just want to say I don't think MuggleCast is ever going to end. However, the weekly podcast will at some point. I don't think MuggleCast can go on for years and years, just not on a weekly basis. So it'll always be around.
That's true.
I could really see 20 years from now is a real stretch, but say 5-10 years from now, doing an occasional episode. Okay, Jamie wants to get out of here. So
I want to go out of here, but it's late. We need to stop making noise.
I know it's late. You're right. Okay. So once again, thank you for listening. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Jamie Lawrence.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Laura Thompson.
And I'm Mike Attenabell.
Visit MuggleCast.com for all the tour information you need, and definitely show up in Chicago or London for two of the biggest events in the
London.
World.
Sorry.
London. That's what I said, right?
Chicago or London.
No, I was oh, doing
London,
that thing where
London.
People cough and say something and then pretend they coughed.
Oh,
no.
Really? Oh, really? I thought you had a cold.
Yeah.
We'll see everyone next week for episode 89. And oh my gosh, 98. Bye.
Bye-bye.
98. Jeez, bye. Laura, I gave your pants back, right? Did you get them?
Hey!
Eric.
Nice, Eric.
No, we have to cut that out.
Did you get your pants back?
I did.
Laura wants to cut it out because it's true. That's the funny part. Laura, could I just play it off?
Were they suitably washed?
Look, it's perfectly good explanation, okay? It was just in Los Angeles. She left a few hours before me and she packed everything except one pair of pants, and I said, oh, that's Laura's. I think I should take it with me and I'll mail it back to her when I get home.
8 months after the fact.
8 months later, yeah. I did, yeah.
I didn't get it until like right before you left for New Zealand. All right, but
that's a little weird,
well,
Eric. But
better late than ever.
Andrew, We should tell the story of when you found my underwear in your sister's room. And I don't know how it got there, seriously. So I seriously have no idea how it got
there. We've moved on from that. I don't want to think about that.
Andrew, your mum must have sorted that accidentally, because I swear I didn't do anything untoward.
It probably was my mom made the mistake. But because your underwear is girly underwear, so she probably thought, oh, it's Becca's. So
yes, it's completely. I wear knickers.
What a knickers. What a knickers. Jamie,